I wonder how many of you have seen the movie Failure to Launch. Some of you have seen it, nodding your heads. It's quite a funny movie. I hesitate to recommend movies because there's always something in movies nowadays that is objectionable. And there certainly is in that movie. But, you know, the basic premise of the movie, I think, is a funny one. And that is about how so many young people today, 25, 35, even 45, are still living at home. And in this particular movie, Matthew McConaughey is a 35-year-old man who's still living at home. And his parents just are trying everything to try and get him out of the house, basically, to try and get him to move out. But he just isn't taking any of the hints. And, you know, it's quite a funny movie, and if you want to watch it, that's fine. But you know, the basic premise is that the guy, I think he says at one point, "I want to have fun rather than get married," is what he says. And, you know, it's interesting because when I heard that, you know, I thought, that's familiar. Not in my own situation at all. I would never feel that. Never. But I've heard this before from other guys. You know, "I'd rather have fun than get married." And this is really a total reversal of the way things used to be. You know, I've said before, I think that one of the most significant social developments in the last 50, 60 years was the birth control pill, which came out in 1960 and perhaps is the biggest single culprit in terms of how our morality changed. It enabled the sexual revolution of the 1960s to take place. But, you know, you think about it, for thousands of years, read any literature written from before that time. You know, you just read anything, any novels, anything. For thousands of years, you know, men really could not satisfy their sexual drive until they were married. Women could not risk pregnancy because they were usually left holding the baby, literally. This is before paternity tests. You know, who knew who the baby belonged to. So, you know, prior to that time, you did have, of course, you did have people get pregnant out of wedlock. In fact, you know, the Puritans, who were considered very prudish and very moral, 20% of all the Puritan weddings were followed within 6 months by a birth. This was in the 1600s and 1700s, the early settlers in America. So 20% of those couples had to get married, which was the expression that was used. So, you know, these things have always gone on. But the point is, you know, when a girl did get pregnant, you know, they had to get married. That was the custom. That was the way that it was. And, of course, the birth control pill changed everything because people could now do what they want without the fear of any consequences, as a result of which we have seen a significant change in our morality. And, of course, it was the case for thousands of years that a man could not get what he wanted until he could provide for a wife and children. So, therefore, getting a good career was extremely important. You know, having a good job was extremely important. So as soon as school was out, you know, that was the priority for all men because they couldn't get the girl until they got the job. That was the way it worked. And, of course, again, that has changed. So now what you see now is people are maturing later rather than earlier, you know, because this, you know, rite of passage to manhood, of course, is no longer there. Now, people have been deceived into thinking this is progress when really the reverse is the case. Nobody is happier as a result of these changes. In fact, many people find their lives empty. And I think that was really true with Matthew McConaughey and his friends in this movie. You know, they were all living empty lives, just going from one fun-filled activity or binge-drinking night to another without any responsibility, without any sense of commitment, and, you know, still in their mid-30s, still conducting themselves that way. Now, I'm not trying to make anybody feel bad. I can't think of anybody in their mid-30s this applies to here, so hopefully nobody's getting upset here. But, you know, I think, you know, we need to look at this subject. So, you know, empty lives is a problem that we see a great deal of. The BBC had a report a few days ago on alcoholism around the world, and it was very interesting how things have changed in the Western world. They had doctors in different countries saying that up until even 10 years ago, most of the people that were coming into their surgeries with liver problems as a result of drinking too much alcohol, were men in their 50s and 60s. Now they said they're getting both men and women in their 20s coming in whose livers have been damaged to such an extent that there's nothing that can be done for them. In their 20s. Alcoholism has become such a major problem. And of course it is largely because of binge drinking. And you've got people who just look forward to every Friday night to go out and binge drink. Basically to drink so much that they pass out. So it's not uncommon for a person to have a fifth by themselves. Now some people can die if they drink a fifth. It's not a fifth anymore, is it? What is it? 715 mils or something? We've got to get metric here, get, you know, more progressive. But, you know, a bottle that size, basically. But, you know, you can have one person drink the whole bottle. And, of course, you've got more people dying from this as well as a result of binge drinking. But, you know, what is at the bottom of this? And, you know, the report on the BBC that was talking about this problem was saying that really, what it is that people are just trying to escape. They're trying to escape from reality. And it's the same with so many of these other things that we see in our society today. Drugs, as well as alcohol. And again, it comes down very much to empty lives. There's a scripture that all of this brings to mind in John chapter 10. I realize I'm biased because I'm a pastor and because, you know, I'm in the church, but having said that, I've always felt that if people do not have God in their lives, then their lives are going to be empty. Because there's a part of everybody that needs a personal relationship with God. And your life cannot be full without God. John 10 and verse 10, Jesus Christ says this, in the second part of the verse, I have come that they may have life, and that they may have it more abundantly. So here he's saying that we should live abundant lives. People who come into the church should live abundant lives. Really happy, fulfilled lives. Without the emptiness that so many other people have. You know, when I go back and see my brothers in England, you know, I often feel like their lives are just empty, you know, compared to mine. It's not a judgmental position that I'm in when I'm there. I just feel like they don't know what I know. They don't have the understanding that I've got, and you know, their lives are just quite empty as a result of that. And you know, I've got family members in my extended family that you know, that Friday night or Saturday night out drinking is the highlight of the week, and so they're guilty of binge drinking as well. So how can we live life more abundantly? Well, let's use the Bible as the key to understanding here. And I've got 7 points here that I want to cover in answering this question. How can we have life more abundantly? And, you know, specifically I'm thinking of younger people here, having been inspired by the movie Failure to Launch and by counseling many people over the past few months and years, because I do see this emptiness in many people's lives. How can we live life more abundantly? Look at Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33. Because my first point, I believe, is the most important one biblically, and it's something that we need to think about. In verse 33, it says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. It says first, seek these things first, the kingdom of God and his righteousness. This is the priority, and because it is not a priority for most people, their lives are going to be unbalanced. And in fact, people are not going to have an abundant life unless they are seeking God and his kingdom first. Because, you know, we do need to have that relationship with God. Without it, something's going to be lacking. You know, atheists might fill their life, they might follow some of the other points that I've got here, but without that relationship with God, they're still not going to have fulfilled lives. They're not going to live life abundantly. And Jesus Christ wants us to live life abundantly. Exodus chapter 20. Now, nothing in this first point is new. I mean, these are things that we've talked about before. But, you know, the fact is, it doesn't mean that everybody's doing it. And if your life is somewhat empty, if you don't feel that you're living life abundantly, if you don't feel that you're truly blessed, if you don't feel that you're happier and more fulfilled than your friends that are not in the church, that really don't have the understanding that we've got, then there's something wrong. There's something wrong. And, you know, so think about these points that I'm making here. Exodus 20, God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Now, when people think about this, when they read this, they generally think, you know, we shouldn't have idols like they have in some churches, like in the Catholic Church, for example. You know, we shouldn't have you know, anything like Islam or Buddhism or whatever. We shouldn't get into those things. That's what people think. But, you know, there's a wider application of this particular point. Nothing should be more important to us than our relationship with God. That is a key to living life abundantly, to being the happiest, which is what Christ wants us to be. It is very much a key. In fact, it is the key to living life abundantly. Our relationship with God must be our priority. Doesn't mean to say that we have to enter the United Church of God equivalent of a monastery and just pray and study all day. I'm not suggesting that. But, you know, our relationship with God should be of paramount importance. There should be nothing that is more important if we are going to live life abundantly, which is what Jesus Christ wants us to do. He wants us to be really happy and to enjoy life, you know. And you think about other things that he said in Matthew 5, where he talks about how we should let our light shine. How can we let our light shine if we're not living life abundantly? If it's not clear to people that we're different, that there's something better about us, that we're happier, that we bring joy into a room when we enter a room. You know, when we go back to our families, when we go back to family gatherings, for example, do we bring joy and happiness into the room? Or are we all kind of gloom and doom? You know, I'll be frank, I've got a brother who, you know, has done me a lot of damage in the sense that he was in the church for a while, and he's no longer in the church. He's basically a stay-at-home Bible student, but he's all gloom and doom all the time. And so, you know, my brother's image, my other brother's image of religion is just gloom and doom. And, you know, my brother talks about the end of the world all the time. And I've told my brothers, I said, there's nothing in the Bible that talks about the end of the world. Nothing. I don't talk about the end of the world. We talk about the kingdom of God, maybe the end of the age, but not the end of the world. So, you know, the message is not one of gloom and doom. It's very positive, very uplifting. Because Jesus Christ is returning to the earth, and the kingdom of God is going to give this planet the greatest period of time that it's ever had. So it's all very positive, very uplifting, and something that we can look forward to. Matthew 22, verse 35, beginning verse 35. Let's have a look here, beginning in verse 35 of Matthew 22. One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? Jesus said to him, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. So again, as we look at these scriptures, we realize this should be our priority in our lives. If we really want to live the abundant life that Jesus Christ wants us to live, then this should be the number one priority in each of our lives. We can't get around that. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. These sum up the law of God, our relationship with God, and our relationships with other people. And again, this is for our good. These are for our good. It's like the commandments are for our good. The commandments were not given to stop us from having fun. Well, they stop you from having the kind of fun that people indulge in who are into binge drinking and drugs and, you know, promiscuity and so on. All of those things, that kind of fun. People think that is fun. But there's an emptiness in that. You know, there's no sense of fulfillment. There's no happiness. And people die young. as a result of those things, and they live rather miserable lives as a result of it. So again, our priority should be our relationship with God. And then of course the second thing is our relationships with other people. So that is the second point here. The seven simple steps here. The seven simple steps to living life abundantly. Love toward God, love toward neighbor. And if we don't put those in those positions, first and second, then our lives are going to be out of balance. And as a result of it, we're going to be unhappy to one degree or another. Or we're going to be stressed. Stressed out. A lot of people are stressed because they're trying to fit in all these things that they think are fun, which lead to emptiness. And if we just stand back and realize, you know, wait a minute, this is the way the whole world is. All these things, everybody's stressed out, and look what's happening. You know, look what's happening to people because of all of this stress. There's a great deal of unhappiness. And we just have to stop and take stock of our situation and start and put our lives back together and realize that, you know, all of these points apply. These priorities should be the priorities in our lives. So after our relationship with God, love toward neighbor. Fulfillment, in other words, comes first through our relationship with God, and secondly through our relationships with each other. Now the problem is, this is the electronic age. Most people now have been brought up with never-ending entertainment. Music, TV, videos, DVDs, computers, video games. Consequently, everything else seems boring. Because we've had all those things stimulating our minds, or rather depressing our minds, because they really don't stimulate the mind. But we've had all of those things, you know, they've done studies even on how the mind reacts to a lot of these images that we're constantly bombarded with, and they certainly do things to the mind, and we get out of sync, we get out of balance, and consequently, you know, miss out on what is most important and what is most pleasurable. And the most important is our relationship with God, and secondly, our relationships with each other. Conversation as a result of this electronic age is difficult for some. That, of course, means that prayer is difficult. If people can't converse with each other, how are they going to converse with God? So prayer has become difficult and challenging for people. I know these things because people share them with me as we talk, and you know, I try to help people to see things from a different perspective and try in a different way. But a root cause of many of the problems is all the electronic gadgets, which cause distractions. You know, when I was a kid, or even when I was an adult in my 20s, we'd never heard of attention deficit disorder, ADD. You know, it didn't exist. That is a late 20th century, early 21st century phenomenon. And what has caused it? Well, you know, you think about it. All those electronic images again. You know, they stop people from being able to concentrate. Even the way TV is. You know, that you watch TV shows. You know, after, what is that, 8 minutes, you have commercials. You know, after watching that for a long time, after 8 minutes, you've got to get up and do something. Because every 8 minutes, there's a break for commercials. So you get pre-programmed. After 1 8-minute, you go to, you know, make a sandwich. After another 8 minutes, you go get a drink. After another 8 minutes, you need the bathroom. After another 8 minutes, you know, and it goes on like this. So, you see, it has an effect on your body. And, you know, these are changes which are very different from the way things were 50 or 100 years ago. Look at the third thing, which again is a way to have life more abundantly. And that is, building on what I've already said, the first one, our relationship with God. The second, our relationship with other people. Thirdly, is marriage itself, which, you know, until fairly recently, that's the course that people embarked upon when they, you know, finished school. The next thing they wanted to do was get a good job and get married. Marriage being primarily for companionship. Genesis 2, verse 18. God said, "It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him." You know, one of the great things about marriage is we have somebody to share our lives with. We have somebody to witness our lives, to validate our lives. And so, again, it is very much a part of living the abundant life. Now, you know, some people, of course, the partner that they were married to has died, and doesn't mean life is over. You have to live a fulfilled life in other ways, but I think for those who can, this is a part of living life abundantly, is getting married. And tied in with that is having children, because they really fulfill your life. Well, they definitely fill your life, because children are a 24-hour-a-day responsibility. But, it's just tremendous. I mean, I've just been down in Indianapolis with Alex and Mike and Alyssa, as well as going to Cincinnati. And, I really didn't want to come home. They were saying last night, why don't you just cancel church tomorrow? I said, I can't do that, can I? But when Alyssa comes up and doesn't want me to go, it's just so hard, Maybe I should have brought her up here and brought her to church. But, it's really great to be with young babies again. And I think actually everything is the wrong way around. I think really we should have had grandchildren first, because they're so much easier and so much more pleasurable. Palace was down there with us as well, and Alex was there, and I was saying to Alyssa, I said, I've never seen such a beautiful baby. And well, thanks a lot, Anyway, cheers. I had a good time. But, children really are a blessing. Genesis 1, verses 27 and 28. God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. I mentioned this and put it in here because I think this is an area where, again, today, we have a problem, because we have an attitude problem really in the Western world today, and that is that we tend to think of children as getting in the way of fun, and again, that is very different from the way it's always been in the past. And again, it is due to social changes that have taken place in our societies, in our culture over the past 100 years. There was a time when children were your security for old age. In fact, that was the case really right up until, say, Social Security was introduced, which was, at the time of the Great Depression in the 1930s. But before that, people had to have children to take care of them in old age and to carry on the land. Most people were farmers, so they had land. They worked on that land. You were working to pass that on to your children, and each generation would improve the land and develop the land. And so, that was the traditional family structure. And it's all got changed. And now children get in the way of careers, and they get in the way of having fun, because people want to go off and do things all the time. And, money, of course, is another factor. Children cost money. And so there's a negativity when it comes to children. Not with everybody, but I think we have to examine ourselves and just ask, am I negative about my children? Because if you are, they'll be negative about you later on. So you've really got to think about that. And we shouldn't be negative when it comes to children. And children are very much a part of living life abundantly, because, the happiest people I know and always have known are couples who are committed to each other and have families. And although there are stresses, there are strains, there are difficulties, there are challenges, there are days when you might wish you were single again, but having said that, it's still very much a part of living this abundant life. And overall, I think we're all very thankful for it. The Lansing State Journal had an article on the 2nd of July, I think it was last Sunday. The title was All Alone Together. And the article was based on a recent survey which showed that 1 in 3 Americans admitted to not having anybody to talk to about personal things. They had no close friendships. And this is the worst figure ever since they started taking polls and started studying these things. And I know a lot of people have said that to me. They just feel like nobody cares, nobody wants them, nobody's interested in their lives. And 1 in 3 Americans now admit they have nobody to talk to about anything personal. The trend, according to this article last Sunday, is toward fewer friends and increasing isolation. People are more and more likely to isolate themselves from everybody else. So they just want to stay at home with all those electronic gadgets that bring other voices into your home, without you having to make any effort, really. You can listen to other people talking. You can watch other people talking on TV. So you don't have to really make any effort. Some people just don't want to make the effort to get to know other people. Some even don't know how. Look at Proverbs 18. There's a very good principle here when it comes to making friends. I've even had people getting kind of upset with me because they haven't got any friends in the church, and it's all my fault. And I think, well, how can I, create friends? I just can't do that. You've got to make friends yourself. That's just the very nature of friendship. It's like I'm not the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. I can't find you a wife or a husband either. You know the moon is, they do that. One guy I know, he was a moony for a long time, and his wife was chosen by the minister, Sun Myung Moon. They have these gatherings of thousands of people, like 10,000 at a time. And he just goes down row after row, and he says, you marry her. That's it. That's your partner for life chosen. You might never have talked to them before, but he tells you who to marry, and you've got to marry that person. And he married, he was an American Jew who married a Korean girl. So can you imagine the cultural difference there? But he had to do that because that was the teaching of the church. You marry the person that the minister chooses. Now, some of you might wish that I could find you a wife, but believe me, you should be thankful that I don't, because, you wouldn't want the person I'd probably choose. Proverbs 18, verse 24. There are some things you just got to do yourself, like finding a wife or a husband, making friends. Those are things you've got to do yourself, okay? It's not my job to do that. Verse 24. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. See, that's the way to start making friends, is just to be friendly. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. Same with women, too. So, you just take the initiative, basically, and start trying to get together with people and just develop a friendship. It takes time, it takes effort, and it is amazing how big a problem that is to people now because of this electronic age that we've grown up in. There's other factors that have influenced it, too. A lot of parents today are afraid to let their kids go out and play on the street. So often their children don't, grow up meeting other kids. And I certainly had that when I grew up. I mean, I would, in the summer months, leave the house after breakfast, and I sometimes didn't get home till the evening. My parents didn't worry about that because that was quite normal for kids at that time. You just go off all day and have fun, Now a lot of people can't do that. Instead, they're confined to a room on the internet looking at MySpace.com or, watching movies or playing video games. So many have not learned that social interaction, which is extremely important for children. They've got to learn that as they grow up. And, it was interesting, again, just putting Alyssa and Paris together the first time. They sit there and kind of look at each other. They're not sure about each other. So the kids are that young. They don't know what to do with each other. But, gradually they start to play. And that's very much a part of that interaction. And later on, no doubt they'll start talking. Well, they must do because they're girls. They'll be talking a lot later on. So, it'll be hard to shut them up when they get older. Point number four. Again, all this, how to live life abundantly, what our priorities should be. And not necessarily, in some cases, not necessarily in any specific order. The first one, of course, and the second one are very much based on the biblical priorities. But these others are building on that as well. And the fourth one really is our health. Health. Again, this is a part of living life abundantly because we do need to take care of our health. And, I think balance is the key here. We've got in this congregation some who don't even try to take care of their health, while others, I think, try too hard. It is possible to exercise too much and to be fanatical about health. But it's also true that we do need to take care of our health. It's interesting, again, if you look at Matthew 22 again, it's something Jesus Christ said here. Matthew 22, verse 39, beginning verse 37, he said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." So it's also telling you to love yourself. You know, take care of yourself. Now, you should care about your neighbor in the same way that you care about yourself, but you must care about yourself. And some people don't. I mean, some people, they work so hard, they really neglect themselves. You know, and that's not good for people to do that. But we do need to take care of ourselves. We're supposed to love ourselves, to take care of ourselves. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul writing here to Corinth said this in verses 16 and 17. "Do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you?" We have the Holy Spirit within us, and you know we have a responsibility to look after our bodies, which are the temple of God and the dwelling place of the Holy Spirit. "If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him. For the temple of God is holy, which temple you are." So, you know, we shouldn't abuse our bodies. And, you know, binge drinking, for example, is one way in which people abuse their bodies. Doing drugs, smoking cigarettes, all of those things are. But, you know, eating all those burgers and fries and drinking Coke and stuff, all that is bad for us as well. So, you know, we have to be very careful and make sure that we do look after our bodies. They've got to last us a long time. And realize there is a responsibility here, a spiritual responsibility before God. If we have an addiction problem, like alcohol, for example, or cigarettes, or drugs, whatever the drug may be of any kind, you know, then we do need to get help. As Christians, that's what we should do. You know, there was a time in the church where if somebody had a drinking problem, he would just be told to quit attending until they stopped drinking. And I think now we do understand, not just as a church, but as society as a whole, we understand that it's not that simple, that alcoholism is a disease, that it is something. In some cases, people are born with a predisposition towards it, and in some cases, it's a genetic causation going back to previous generations. But whatever, if you are trying to follow God, then you want to do something about it. And you have that responsibility. And that means you've got to go and get some help. You've got to go to rehab, to AA at least, or somewhere else to get some help for the problem. And the same is true with other addictions as well, whatever the addiction might be. So we do have to make sure that we deal with those problems. So here we do need to take care of our bodies. It was a very good article in a magazine called Best Life, which I want to read to you here, because it's something that obviously, I thought about because of having come from England. But a recent health study of American whites and British whites, they just took the same ethnic group, basically, you know, the British or Anglo-Saxon, whatever, white people and also Americans, because of the link and the fact that our lifestyles are very similar. Well, actually, our lifestyles are not very similar, but genetically we're very similar, is what I should say. And they studied health, the health of the different peoples on both sides of the Atlantic. This was an American study, and I want to read to you this. "Researchers were stumped. The results of this study seemed to defy explanation, yet the data was quite clear. In conjunction with doctors from the University College of London, researchers at the RAND Corporation in Santa Monica, California, had set out to compare the relative health of people who live in the United States and the United Kingdom. At the very least, one would expect general parity between the two like-minded nations. You'd expect things would be very similar. But the researchers reporting in the Journal of the American Medical Association in May couldn't have put it more bluntly. Americans are much sicker than the English. I mean, just look at you all compared to me, you know? No, I jest. In this respect, unfortunately, I'm very American. Their study, Disease and Disadvantage in the United States and England, found a number of surprises. High blood pressure is 10% more common in the U.S. than in Britain. Americans in their 40s and 50s are twice as likely as their English counterparts to have diabetes. More than 40% of American men have C-reactive protein levels, a predictor of heart disease, in the high-risk group compared with just 30% of English men. And their mean CRP levels are 20% higher. What's going on here, it says? Aren't the English famous for smoking, drinking beer, and eating bangers and mash? Bangers are pork sausages. The most head-scratching note from the study is that the wealthiest Americans, just listen to this, the wealthiest Americans, those supposedly with access to the healthiest food, most sophisticated exercise equipment, and most advanced medical technology, the wealthiest Americans are only just as well off health-wise as the poorest of their British citizens. So, you know, quite a devastating study. The Lancet State Journal called for more research because it said we need some more specific answers on this. Why is our health so much worse than people on the other side of the Atlantic? It says, why? Climate, social structure, and culture are relatively similar between the two nations. However, this research implicates one major factor in the life of a typical American man that is not present in that of his British counterpart. Stress. From our hectic, overachieving lifestyle. Americans schedule an average of 14 vacation days a year. The average Englishman takes 24. What's more, Americans typically don't use 3 of those days, giving the time back to their employers because they're too busy to take time off. Could the very Puritan work ethic that founded our country be responsible for our foundering health? In all likelihood, yes, it says. The American Psychological Association claims that 43% of Americans suffer from stress-induced health effects, such as insomnia, weight gain, chest pains, depression, and fatigue. Earlier this year, a nationwide survey by the APA found that 59% of Americans blame their jobs for their stress, and guess which age group led all others in feeling the pressure? 40 to 49-year-olds, 58% of whom reported feeling very concerned about their daily stress levels. But it's an interesting article, and it does make you think, you know, why is our health such a problem? And of course, part of it is the stress. People on the other side of the Atlantic are also less obese, generally speaking. And there are a couple of reasons for that. One is that people walk a lot more. With gas at $8 a gallon, you walk. So maybe we will all get healthier if gas keeps on going up in price. I don't know. But, you know, certainly that is true on the other side of the Atlantic. People walk more. Another thing, though, is EU health regulations, food regulations are stricter. So, for example, the biggest single cause of obesity in the United States is high fructose corn syrup, which never even came out until 1980. It's in all our soft drinks, except the diet drinks. The diet drinks have NutraSweet or Aspartame or Splenda, which have bad side effects themselves. But high fructose corn syrup is far worse than sugar. And a lot of people, certainly people, you know, in my generation, brought up with warnings about sugar. They look at the ingredients on something, they see that sugar's not listed, and think, oh, this is fine. But high fructose corn syrup may be the number one thing listed. And it's banned in the European Union because it is such a major health problem. And it is the biggest single cause of obesity. You might want to make sure you look at some of your cans and your packets for that and really make sure that it's not in the top 4 ingredients. You know, when they list the ingredients, the biggest single ingredient is listed first, the second biggest second, the third third, and so on. And if high fructose corn syrup or just corn syrup is in that top 4, then, you know, avoid the stuff. You can find alternatives. They usually cost a bit more. But it is the primary cause of obesity, the single biggest cause. of obesity as that problem. And it only came out in 1980. And, you know, that is one reason why we've all kind of doubled in size in the past 25 years because of, you know, this particular ingredient. Sugar, of course, is also bad. Of course, exercise is another thing that is necessary when it comes to taking care of our health. Walking, for example, helps you relax. Everybody can walk. It helps you relax, to focus, appreciate creation. Different sports can have different beneficial health effects, but, you know, some can also be risky, especially if you've not been exercising a great deal. What about alcohol? Look at 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy chapter 5. All these articles on health are enough to drive you to drink, so I better cover this. First Timothy, chapter 5, verse 23. The Apostle Paul writes to Timothy, a younger man, and says, "No longer drink only water, but use a little wine for your stomach's sake and your frequent infirmities." So, you know, nothing wrong with drinking a glass of wine with taking alcohol, and it certainly can be beneficial. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 8 reminds us, though, this is the chapter dealing with the qualifications for the ministry. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 8 says, "Likewise, deacons must be reverent, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy for money." You know, alcohol in moderation is fine. In excess is not good. It impairs the judgment. It makes you a dangerous driver. And, of course, it can have serious health effects. It can damage your liver. As these doctors said on this item last week on the news, that many people now in their mid-20s are turning up in their surgeries with damaged livers, with cirrhosis of the liver and other health problems as a result of drinking too much. And, again, a primary cause of over-drinking is just simple emptiness. The same with drugs. You know, people have got empty lives and they're trying to fill them. They're trying to fill them with fun. Or in some cases, they're so stressed out that they just want to escape from everything, and so they escape into the bottle. Let's look at point number 5. The electronic age has left people uninterested in many things. I find that in talking to people, especially those who have relied too much on electronic gadgets, that their interests are not very wide. They're really not interested in all that much because they've been entertained by all these things, video games, videos, etc. There's a big billboard ad for, I think it's United Negro Colleges. They're still called that, even though the word is not used anymore. But the ad, I think, has got a very catchy phrase. "A mind is a terrible thing to waste. A mind is a terrible thing to waste." It struck me that on the health side, you could twist it around and say a waste is a terrible thing to mind. But anyway, let's stay with what's up there on the billboard. "A mind is a terrible thing to waste." And, you know, it's very true. I think a lot of people just waste their minds. They don't want to develop their minds. Let's have a look at Jesus Christ in this respect, at his example. Again, look at Matthew 22. Matthew 22, it's right there in the passage that we've already read. Matthew 22 and verse 35. It says, "One of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, 'Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?'" See, Jesus Christ would debate with lawyers, and he always won. You look at those confrontations with lawyers and with the religious leaders. You know, he had a great mind. He understood the scriptures. And he understood the legal profession and understood the religious leaders and was able to debate with them and show them where they were wrong. Now, you know, he was also a carpenter, so he had a physical job. And, you know, hard labor, 6 days a week. But he also developed the mind. You know, you can develop both. And Jesus Christ showed that. And so, you know, we shouldn't sell ourselves short and think that, you know, maybe if our work is more in the laboring area, that perhaps our mind is no good, because the mind can be developed as well, and vice versa. The Apostle Paul also, look at the Apostle Paul. Paul was interested in something that I don't care about myself. You see it here in Acts chapter 17, beginning in verse 22. Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious." So here he was lecturing the Athenians. He wasn't from Athens, but he was lecturing the Athenians, who were, you know, like another people compared to him. But he knew their culture and he knew their country. "For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you. God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Nor is he worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. He has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the earth, face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as also some of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring." Paul knew Greek poetry. Now, maybe there's one or two of you here who like to read poetry, but I don't. You know, I had to read it sometimes in school, and I still remember some of those poems, but I don't think I picked up a book of poetry since. And, you know, I'm not suggesting that you should read poetry necessarily, but the point is, you know, Paul was a well-rounded person. He was a fisherman and a tent maker. You know, he had experience in those days, tent making primarily, but, you know, in addition, you know, he'd been a member of the Sanhedrin. He knew a great deal about the law. He was of Greek culture, and, you know, here he was familiar with the poetry of the Greeks. And, you know, that's something which I find very interesting. So, you know, you can diversify. Look at some of these things. Get interested in some of these things. You know, reading has kind of gotten out of fashion, but it's still the best way to develop the mind, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Point number six. Again, living life abundantly. Matthew 22, verse 42. Something which Jesus Christ told us to do here. Matthew 24, rather, and verse 42. "Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming." You know, here there's a dual message. Watch yourself spiritually, but also watch what is happening in the world. You know, especially as we get moved towards those end time events. So, you know, it's important to try to understand what is happening in the world, because these things impact us greatly. I've been somewhat interested, and in fact quite interested in the reactions as the gas price keeps on going up. We had one letter to the Lansing State Journal, which just, you know, this guy should have gotten 150% in ignorance. And there's quite a few people who write for the Lansing State Journal who should get 150% in that area, myself not included, hopefully. But this particular person wrote a letter, and he said, you know, with the gas crisis, that Congress should simply pass a law that gas should sell for $1 a gallon and then enforce it. And, you know, what a stupid comment. Yeah, there's no way Congress can do that. There's no way the president can do anything to affect the price of gas. I can't think of anything that he could possibly do. It's supply and demand. As the demand goes up and the supply doesn't, therefore the price will go up. That's been an economic law, you know, for zillions of years. It's just one of those things, and it goes up all over the world. But, you know, one thing that has struck me, though, by this debate in the paper is that few people really are interested in why it is going up all the time. Because, of course, that involves understanding some of the complex situations in the Middle East, even in Nigeria and Venezuela and Russia. The price is affected by things that are happening everywhere. And it just keeps on going up. And it's going to continue going up unless, you know, the amount of oil available suddenly doubles, which is not likely. So it's going to keep on going up. And you'd think people would be interested, but, you know, instead, of course, they just blame Congress or blame the president, and they'll probably put somebody else in the White House when they can, because they'll think he'll bring the price down. But, you know, it's just not possible. So, you know, watch world events. Try to understand these things. Take an interest in what's happening around you. I mentioned that reading is becoming out of fashion, but if you were reading U.S. News and World Report recently, they had a segment on Alzheimer's and the progress that's been made on Alzheimer's over the past 10 or 20 years. And, you know, research has been very interesting because they have found that the biggest single predictors of Alzheimer's are how much TV a person watches. The more TV they watch, the more likely it is that Alzheimer's will set in later. It has something to do with the flickering image, not the programs, although maybe the programs, some of those programs probably say you've already got a problem. But anyway, there's the flickering image and the effect it has on the brain causes, you know, Alzheimer's to be speeded up. That's basically what it comes down to. And not just TV, but the flickering image on computers and video games as well. So, you know, those are a primary cause of Alzheimer's. Another, by the way, you know, is obesity, because it stops the blood going to the arteries, so, you know, stops them getting up to the mind, but to the brain, basically. So that was another factor. But when the subject came up of what is the best way of avoiding Alzheimer's, it said three things. Study, study, study. Because that is exercise for the brain, exercise for the mind. Study, study, study. And that is the best way to avoid Alzheimer's later on in life. So, you know, the fact that people are reading less, which of course means studying less. Study, of course, is a deeper level of reading than just reading. You know, we're not talking here about reading the comics in the Sunday paper. We're talking here about something deeper than that. Study, study, study is exercise for the mind. And that helps us avoid Alzheimer's later on. And again, ties in with developing other interests and watching world events, you know, which are both very important, and reading is important in both of those areas. Finally, number seven, and I put this last because most people put it first. Not because I'm trying to say it's the least important, okay, but it certainly does not replace those top two. Point number seven is find a career that makes you happy and fulfilled. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10. If you don't have a career that where you're happy and have a sense of fulfillment, then of course you're going to be miserable for roughly 10 hours of each day. So no matter, even if the rest of your life is fulfilled and abundant, if you're lacking in this area, that could still be a bit of a downer. So try to find something that makes you really happy. If not, there are certainly compensations in other areas of life. But find a career that makes you happy. Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 10 says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. So, you know, now's the opportunity to live that fulfilled life, that abundant life. And whatever career you find to do, do it with your might. Really put yourself into it. And you'll get a great sense of fulfillment, even if the financial rewards are not as great as they might be. Oh, I heard something yesterday that I found really interesting when I was driving back. It was saying that the average government employee now, federal government employee, costs the taxpayer $100,000 a year with benefits, with retirement, etc. The average person employed in the private sector costs $52,000 a year. So, you know, that's very interesting because it says a lot about the way our economy is going, and also says a lot about, you know, productivity and problems and so on. But, you know, so if you're in the private sector, you may not be as wealthy as you might be in government. But the point is, you know, that you need to look for something that really makes you happy and gives you a sense of fulfillment. So these then are some thoughts on how to live that abundant life that Jesus Christ said he wants us to live. The first two, as I said, are the most important: love toward God and love toward our neighbors, putting our emphasis there. But the other things also, in whatever order you want to put them in, and how they apply to you. But, you know, it's sad when you see people whose lives are just not very fulfilled, and, you know, that there's an emptiness there in life. People are addicted. A lot of addictions, a lot of people that I talk to really have addiction problems of one sort or another. You know, some are addicted to alcohol, some to video games, some to TV, some to internet pornography, all kinds of things that people are addicted to. And, you know, a lot of these addictions are due to emptiness in people's lives. And, you know, they stop people from living the abundant life that Jesus Christ wants us to live. I hope you'll all stay for the potluck. And the young adults Bible study will start in about an hour.